How's it going? And welcome to episode 233 of On the Wire. Proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings, and we have a pretty good show. We did this show last year around this same time, just a good way of us to kind of recap some things that stood out for us in 2025. Hopefully we can take that into 2026 with whatever size grain of salt you want. But we're going to be looking at some 2025 surprises, statistical surprises on the positive end. Next show we'll do on the negative end. So let's start on the positive note, Kevin. But before we go into all that and anything else we want to talk about, how you doing?
Doing well, Adam. Thank you so much. Hope you're doing well. Sorry about your Red Sox. I did say I leaned Yankees. Doesn't mean I was rooting for the Yankees.
Sure.
But so and now with the division round starting here on Saturday as we are recording. And Julio Rodriguez just gave Seattle Mariners a lead as we're recording during the fourth game of the day here on Saturday.
There you go. Nice, nice live updates as you're watching. The fact that you're watching or listening to us live instead of maybe you're both. Actually, honestly, anybody who's watching is has tuned into us is watching live. I guarantee you're also watching.
Yeah, the game's on in the background.
Yeah. Or foreground. Maybe we're the background, and that's perfectly fine and expected. Well, we'll get into playoff stuff. Kevin, I want to hear about how you put together your team for the first round of the playoff hold'em, as we talked about in our last episode. And for those watching this on YouTube, I should point out Pitcher List, it has started hiring or at least started application process for joining the Pitcher List team for the 2026 season or even 2025 offseason or, you know, between seasons. So make sure you check over, go head over there and see what's available, what you might be looking for. Love to have some new blood on the team, whether it's podcasting or writing or just research, whether it's baseball or fantasy baseball. There's a whole bunch of opportunities there. So make sure you're checking that out and seeing what you want to do. And tell your friends. If it's not you, it's got to be somebody. Somebody in your group wants to do that. So make sure that they know that that is open for applications at the moment. They are all positions are paid, and they are all remote. We don't have an office, so it makes it a little bit easier to guarantee the remote work. Cool. So Kevin, as I mentioned, I really am curious, and this is more for me than anybody else. How many teams did you end up putting together for the playoff hold'em, NFBC playoff hold'em league? And how did you follow all of, or at least some of the advice that you gave on our last episode?
Yeah, we ended up with one team, and we did follow really closely to everything I talked about on last week's show. We did prioritize pitching with the teams we thought would advance. We took two starting pitchers from each team that we thought would make it to the World Series, and then a single starting pitcher from each team we thought would win the division round and advance to the league championship series. So we prioritized pitching. The one thing I told you this before we started recording, the one name I mentioned last week that I did not use is the guy that popped two home runs in game one. Alejandro Kirk. So I am kicking myself for that one, but it's still early, so we'll see what happens.
It's I pulled up, for those watching at home, I did pull up the rostership percentage over at the postseason hold'em, and I guess I'm a little surprised that there's not one player that's 100% rostered. Like, there's not one player that everybody's just like, it's Coley Chalk. We talked about Cal Raleigh, 81% rostered across all 426 teams that are involved. Tarek Skubal's the highest rostered here at 93%. But there's not a whole lot of players that are even 50% rostered.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Adam, because when I was looking at these right before we got together here this evening, I thought it was fascinating. You know, you mentioned Tariq Skubal, the only player over 90%, three others over 80%. They all make sense. You mentioned Cal Raleigh, Aaron Judge, Freddie Peralta. Those all make sense. Just one player in the 70s. Shohei Ohtani, and then Christopher Sanchez at over 60, five other players over 50%. So we have four players at 80% or higher, and then only seven more that are above 50%. So a huge drop off over that handful. That kind of surprised me.
Yeah, we talked about, you talked a lot about on the last episode about how, you know, you have to have a certain amount of chalk, right? Like you have to have a certain amount of chalk. There's not a lot of chalk here because there's not a lot of overlap across a lot of these rosters. George Springer, the one you kind of brought up right before we started recording with his, 0-for-4 day, even though Toronto put up a whole bunch of runs, he was the one lone Blue Jay not to put up anything. 58% rostered. Of these two, a good chunk of them are pitchers. More than half of those guys that are above 50% rostered are pitchers. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, so just over 50% of them are pitchers. So, I don't know what to take of that, but I do say that I wonder how much chalk will start. You know, does this give an advantage to those who took these more popular players early? And if they do move on, obviously that number is going to go up, right? Like if Philadelphia goes Absolutely. Up, you know, there's going to be more people that have Christopher Sanchez on their rosters in the next round. If, you know, the Yankees move up more, Aaron Judge's will be, it'll go from 84 to, you know, maybe even close to 100%. Obviously that still gives an advantage to the 84% of people who have Aaron Judge for the first round, and then they get the multipliers as well. But do you see this being a little bit more, even like spread out, and maybe this was the year that you could take more chances?
Maybe. I tend to believe that usually there's a few more players that were more heavily rostered. Yes. But I don't have those numbers to verify that. But it seems to me that in the past, that would have been the case. And one thing that I always try to remind myself, yes, if a player is completely just goes off in the World Series and you don't have the maximum multiplier, that can really hurt you. But at the same time, just because you don't have a player in the first round that does advance, you can add them the next round.
Sure.
Other players are going to get more points from them from you, but you can minimize that damage is what I'm getting at.
Fair enough. Interesting how this works, how the math works out here is that because of how many teams are involved, you can still have one roster, but it rounds down to 0%.
Yeah.
One out of 426. Yeah,
we ended up with 427 teams.
Seven, yes. Excuse me. All right. Well, that'll be fun. We'll be tracking this throughout, throughout the playoffs, every episode, checking in, Kevin, seeing how that's going on. I would love to see kind of the choices you make after the first round as well, and kind of seeing where that takes us. But what we're going to talk about, the main crux of what we're going to talk about today, is a lot of the players that kind of stood out in every category, right? We're like, this is how we do all of our in-season episodes, so we're going to keep the kind of similar format. We're going to go category by category: power, speed, opportunity, volume, ratios, and saves. Throw a wild card in there as well, which I'm just realizing I did not put a name on there, so I'm going to have to flip through my Rolodex of names here and figure out who. But I got a whole episode until I have to figure that out. And kind of the names that ended up sticking out, both in a positive manner, guys that helped us on maybe they helped us on one or two of our teams. We didn't really expect that. Maybe we drafted them really low and, you know, they hit the nail on the head of what we were expecting. Maybe we had fabbed them early in the season. And maybe they just overperformed based on their projections. And hopefully we were able to take advantage of them, at least on one or two of our teams. So Kevin, with that in mind, it's like I don't have the outline from last year, so I forgot a lot of the players we talked about, but like, do you have an overarching like thought on why some of these names that we have on our list kind of stood out? I definitely have like a general thought here, but I'm curious to see if you kind of saw anything that kind of connected all of these names together.
Yeah, you know what? You go first, Adam, because I know what you're alluding to for your general thought, and I agree with it. And then let's expand on it a little bit, because I agree with exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm not reinventing the wheel here, but ultimately, most of the things that most of these categories that we're going to go talk about are volume based, and the guys that stood out, a lot of the names that we're putting on here. I actually tried actively to not do this,
to filter it out. Right.
Exactly. For my power, definitely for my power. My power and my speed, were definitely, I tried to leave it out to guys that actually hit their projected playing time. Right. And they still overperformed. And so projecting playing time is the most difficult aspect of every projection. And whether or not they're banking in expected injuries or not, as you mentioned, they're not usually. It's like we're gonna have to hope that they're gonna be perfectly healthy, even if they've never been healthy in their entire careers. And we'll get to one of those names in on here as well. So difficult to kind of nail that on the head. And I'm gonna use a lot of my reference points throughout my picks are gonna be utilizing the PLV projections toward the end of the year, like the fourth or fifth iteration of those from the 2025, and then comparing that to what we actually saw, right? And so there was only one hitter that projection system, that Kyle's projection system, nailed. And we'll get to him in a second, but it's just crazy of all the names that were on that list, and they don't project everybody, right? You just project the guys that are going to make an impact. So it was just crazy that only one of those guys, and of all the guys that they projected to hit, it's a surprising name. So yeah, it's called a tease. So you have to listen a little bit further in for that name. So I think just the playing time in general was very much so in flux. And we saw, you know, I tried to keep out rookies. I tried to keep out, you know, guys that just, you know, went on like, found an opportunity and rolled with it, even though we didn't really expect that. At least we didn't draft accordingly for that. And so I think playing time, both on the hitter and the pitcher side, played a big role into the selections that I tried to make here.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. And just a step further, for some of the players, yes, it's playing time, but it lineup position. Mm. That adds to our plate appearances, right? That at least one of the players I stuck in there, that was a big reason. Opportunities, right? In the speed category, it's opportunity that how often are they going to get turned loose? And we saw a couple of guys get turned loose more than they have in their entire careers, and they're well over 30 years old now, right? So we've seen that as well. You know, I always go back this time of year, and I did want to make a point to bring this up at some point, but it fits in right here. A few years ago, you know, every offseason, Rob DiPietro, Deadpool hitter, does a round table with himself and Steve Weimer, Jeff Zimmerman, Tanner Bell, Uzi Toby, bat flip crazy. If I'm leaving somebody out, I sincerely apologize, but they do that round table every offseason. And a few years ago, when Aaron Judge had his amazing, you know, 62 home run season, after that season, he had not been on a high percentage of main event winning teams. And I love the question Tanner Bell asked. What type of player had Aaron Judge on their team, right? What type of fantasy player? Who were the players that did draft Aaron Judge? Because he was a first round draft pick, late first round that year. Mm-hmm. But he was not on a large percentage of winning teams. Usually a guy having that kind of season at going towards the end of the first round, right? We saw that last year with the pairing of the Ohtani and Jose Ramirez teams. I don't know if you remember that from last season. That was a possibility to get at the 1-2 turn for 2024 season. And the players that did were sitting sweet, right? And so Judge was in a place in a draft that really makes that possible, but he wasn't on a large percentage of winning teams. So when we're looking at these, I'm looking for players that, yeah, they were a surprise, but what can I take from this for next season? That's what I'm looking at when I'm looking at these. Like, and it may not have anything to do with that specific player, but what type of player? And then what? Right. And then, like Tanner brought up, what type of fantasy player is going to draft these guys? So I'm kind of looking at it from that angle as well.
Yeah, I mean, as it goes into as you say all the time, you have to know what kind of player you are and what how much you want to manage your team, how much risk you want to absorb, how much risk you're willing to manage throughout the course of the season, and then. If it's minimal, then you have a lot less darts to throw throughout. You're going to be less likely to be that fantasy player that actually, you know, drafts the Aaron Judge in that scenario or what have you. So, all right, well, let's get into it then. We've got, like I said, we're going to go category by category, a handful of players in the power, speed, opportunity, then we'll hit the pitching categories as well. But before we do that, we are going to take a quick break. All right, we're back. You're still listening to On the Wire into the off season here, which is amazing. Not skipping a beat here, Kevin, going right into, again, this is a recap, not a recap, but it's like it's looking back at 2025 in preparation for 2026, not just kind of sitting here being like, oh, what happened? But more like, hey, what happened? So as you just mentioned, so that we can take it into next year's drafts, whether they're starting today or 3 or 4 months from now. So let's get into the power category here. We'll start with our hitters like we tend to do. Guys that stood out to us in the home run in RBI categories, could be either one, could be both. And I mean, I will throw out, like I said, all right, so I did most of, if not all of my names are all based on either guys, definitely guys that, well, not definitely, cause I didn't have a couple of these guys, but most of these guys I had on at least one team. And more than likely I had them on, well, both of these guys in my power category, I had on my home team, the one I actually, you know, took home a medal for, and they actually made a difference for me. So first one I'll start off with here is Taylor Ward. And Taylor Ward, not a huge, you know, I don't think this comes as a big surprise to anybody. I think a lot of people were, you know, really looking at Taylor Ward as somebody who they expected to continue what we saw him do in 2024. And he did. I think he just did it to a higher degree than any projection actually had of him going in. So a lot of the comparisons here I'm going to make as well are going to be at the projection level, as I use PLV's projections as a comparison. As I toggle through my spreadsheet here, I see that Taylor Ward had, you know, they were pretty close on playing time with Taylor Ward. Only 18 played. He only had 18 more plate appearances in real life than they had him projected to have. But with that,
that was still an easy projection. He had the exact same number of plate appearances in 2024.
There we go. I mean, that does make things a little easier. But with that, with only 18 more plate appearances projected than what he had hit this year, he got 26 more RBI from the projection, or sorry, in real life than from what he was still projected for, and 12 more home runs. So finally hit, you know, crossed that 30 home run mark, with the over the 100 RBI mark, for the first time in his career. And overall, I want to pull this up as well. I've got his, well, first let's throw in his, we're going to share that one. We're going to change our screen here. We've got his rolling chart from 2024 for Process Plus. Pretty much up until halfway through the season and then a gradual downturn. And you can see he missed some time in there as well. And then he had a really big September. Now we flip over to 2025. In a way, it's very similar. We had a really big September or even August into September, but really kind of more of an up and down season. So this is my question to you too about these kind of players that are like, yeah, on this at the end of it all, over 100 RBI, over 30 home runs, you know, a 229, not a batting average that's going to tank you, not helping you though at all as well. How much of this in this type of a player profile actually hit your fantasy line though? And so the fact is, like, I had Taylor Ward on a couple of teams. He wasn't always in my lineup though, just because of the way his season up and down was going. Like, I dropped him in more than one place, right around this spot, like, you know, in May or early May even. And obviously he got hot, picked him back up in most of those places as well. But it's easy to go back and look and say, hey, this guy he outperformed his projections. This guy was a surprise overall, but did I get 100% of that on my roster? And the answer is no. I got most of it and I got enough of it for it to be an impact. But ultimately you're not always going to get 100% of these breakouts because it's not linear. It's almost always never linear. Like all of these guys that we're going to talk about had their peaks, they had their valleys, and those are hard to predict. And this is obviously a hindsight 2020 episode, as the next episode will be as well. But overall, did you have Taylor Ward anywhere? Were you able to manipulate him into your roster in places? Was he an actually positive surprise for you?
I did not have Taylor Ward. He was a positive surprise for me. That jump, you know, 11 more home runs in the same number of plate appearances. That's a nice jump. I think based on what you were just covering, it appears to me that Taylor Ward is one of these players that plays through injury, right? He didn't miss a lot of time, but the slumps, both 2024 and 2025, when you put his POV chart up there, it's when he's missing a couple of games here and there, line up with all the downturns in production. He really appears to be one of these guys that plays through injury. So yeah, most of the time you're going to have him in your lineup because he's playing every day with those 663 plate appearances, but then you bench him once in a while when he's slumping. That makes perfect sense. Fortunately, like I said, I didn't have him anywhere, so I was not dealing with that, but that can be really frustrating. It leads me to wonder it because his batting average has been much better for five consecutive seasons leading to this one. And his strikeout rate has went up the past couple of seasons, but less than 2 percentage points over 2024 and 2025. And we got all this additional power and there's probably a give and take there. So I don't think we'll get all of the batting average left back. But if we can get him back to even 240 and the power sticks, that's amazing for Taylor Ward.
Yeah. So, you know, there's always going to be opportunity with all of these as well. Like you mentioned, like the games that he was missing. And there are some, if you can squint and you can see, there are some, you know, he was platooned a little bit. He wasn't a strict platoon, but he was sitting every once in a while. But it was a lot less this year than it was last year. He was also,
yeah, and he got into the games at some point because he was in 157 games. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kevin, I'm going to toss it back your way, for your, what I had him on my list as well. So I'm not going to call him low hanging fruit, but like, again, this, the reason I took him off of mine, and I'm glad you put him on yours, is the playing time projection. It came into big play with your pick here. So why don't you get into it with your player here?
Yeah, Trent Grisham. And, you know, other than draft and holds, he wasn't drafted. His ADP is after pick 700. But he was picked up early in the season because he came out firing. And yeah, with that power, playing time was an issue for a little while. It kind of shored up there as the season went along, as he continued to produce. And I was fortunate enough to grab Trent Grisham in several leagues because I've always had a soft spot. I always remember him getting traded from Milwaukee to San Diego after that error in the postseason. And I always thought if he figured that all out mentally, that there was more here. So I didn't draft him, but I was quick to pull the trigger when he started out so well. And then when the playing time got better and better as the season went along, he continued to perform. Now, the question becomes, and like I said, I'm trying to, figure out things for 2026 is the value in this exercise for me. And so, yes, the reason you didn't put him on your list is the reason we're going to have a lot of questions next season. What's the playing time going to be like, right? We have no idea with a team like the Yankees that have they have one guy that should be absolutely nothing except a designated hitter these days, and Giancarlo Stanton. They have Aaron Judge, they have Cody Bellinger. He can move around, play first base, but they're still crowded out there, even with the designated hitter position, even with a couple of those guys can play first base. So that's the problem with the season that Trent Grisham gave us at 28 years old, right? He's not over 30 yet, and he just turned, he'll turn 29 here next month. So that's I still have questions with Trent Grisham. I absolutely was ecstatic that I was able to use him as a surprise in power for this show, because I thought it was great. The only downside to Trent Grisham is he's a Yankee, right? Everything else I love about him. So it was great to see, but I do have concerns still going into next season when we're trying to determine playing time, the whole reason you didn't put him on this list.
Right. So yeah, we'll see where he's at and what he ends up playing regardless.
Oh, thank you, Uncle Ted. Yeah. I did not look. He is a free agent, Trent Grisham.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, he could get a qualifying offer. I doubt that'll happen, but especially with all the reasons you mentioned, they're crowded in the Yankees outfield, and they're always going to want to tie up their money in a way that's going to, hopefully, for them, make them the best that they possibly can be. And I think the results of the playoffs will always dictate what the Yankees end up doing in the offseason as well. Like the worse they do, the more they'll, decide they need to spend in what direction they take that in. The other name that I'll kind of throw out here too, there was, I don't expect much out of him next year. But I was happy to see what we got out of him this year. And that was Yandy Diaz down in Tampa Bay, pretty much either leading off or, in the top two positions in that lineup pretty much all season, really stood out. And as I try to find, I have way too many tabs open right now. We had Yandy Diaz with 26, again, pretty good within, 26 plate appearances projected. He had 26 more plate appearances than what were projected, but with that came an additional 19 RBI and 10 home runs. This is somebody who, ever since being traded to Tampa Bay from Cleveland and getting, it was all a matter of two things: one, playing time, and two, not killing worms, not drilling the ball directly into the ground. And he's still kind of, he's not lofting the ball the way that, to an extreme, but he did enough to get that home run total up and to make it, make it useful for us throughout the course of the season. Yandy Diaz is also calling card batting average. Didn't hurt us in that. I mean, he helped us tremendously in that category on top of that. But that's not where I got the surprise to this thing is that wasn't a surprise for Yandy Diaz. The surprise was actually tapping into that power we all knew existed for so long on a consistent basis throughout the course of the season, and being able to get us where we need to be. ADP in the main event for Yandy Diaz, 183rd player off the board. And so that was, you know, right in line. And I think he outperformed that draft slot for sure. And, you know, made people who probably drafted him as their, as a corner option, at that draft position, you know, nice to have that backup first baseman as well. If your first baseman didn't go down, you obviously got first base production out of your corner, which is really what all you're really trying to do with those corner and middle infield draft slots.
I love that pick. I was looking at it and looking at the player rater auction dollars earned in 2025 by first baseman. And, you know, I think us and many others were right on this. And when we started talking about waiting on first base, fascinating to me. Yandy Diaz is the ninth first baseman in the player rater, and with a couple of exceptions, one that we're about to talk about here in a little bit, but with a couple of exceptions, you know, we've kind of lamented in recent seasons, first base isn't what it used to be. We used to be able to get these guys decent batting average, 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, no stolen bases, but we could first base, we could just plug almost anybody in, and sure, that's what we're shooting for. And we got that this year. Yandy Diaz, yeah, you give away a handful of home runs to get a 300 batting average.
Yeah.
Right below him, 10th in the player rater. Vinny Pasquantino, 32 home runs, 113 RBI. Here's the thing. He's the 10th first baseman. That's top 40 overall hitter. Right. So waiting on first base worked out wonderfully. And it wasn't just us. A lot of people were talking about that last draft season. I think that is absolutely still the case. And you can go down a handful more spots, down to Ben Rice, obviously qualified. He's going to be in our lineups at catcher. So I'll go one above him, Tyler Soderstrom. 25 home runs, 93 RBI, 276 average. Right. We'll take that. And, you know, that's, he was a top 50 overall hitter, 13th first baseman, right? So the first basemen are there waiting for us later in the draft, just like we thought they would be.
Yeah. Other guys that honorable mentions, if you will, that were even more low hanging fruit. I mean, you can't not mention Cal Raleigh as a nice surprise. You know, yes, we all know he was a power hitter, power catcher, but nobody expected him to do what he did this year on such a consistent basis as well. Definitely not projections and definitely not any of us. You mentioned Trent Grisham, Junior Caminero, obviously. You know, I tried to keep off rookies off of this as well. Eugenio Suarez projected hit a lot more home runs than projections allotted, even though the at least PLV's projections only had him within 56 plate appearances. So close in that range as well. Spencer Torkelson, that was a big one in just the fact that, mm-hmm. you know, you just didn't, he wasn't even on the roster. He wasn't even supposed to be on the opening day roster. Like, we thought Colton Keith was basically the new first baseman at one point, and he, lo and behold, here we go. 310 more plate appearances than was projected for him, and that thus comes 22 more home runs than were projected as well. Ben Rice, you mentioned, pretty obvious one as well.
Another guy we're going to have a really hard time deciding next year, are the home runs worth the batting average hit? Joe Adell, 37. That's a big number in that home run category.
Yeah, 18 more than projected for Joe Adell. And whether or not, you know, he has that same role, you got to imagine he does, but we'll see where he ends up, you know, yeah, what decisions he ends up making to either keep and or at the expense of that batting average. Most of the other surprises all come from added playing time. Addison Barger, I almost had on here just because that was, you know, somebody I was disappointed in myself for not having more places just because I was so excited about him coming up at first. And then he was off my radar this year just because I wasn't sure exactly what Toronto was going to do with him. On the RBI side, just to rattle off some more names that jumped out at me, Barger was one at the top of the list with 58 more RBI than projected. If we get down to somebody that was a little closer to their projected plate appearances, Kyle Schwarber, as much of a surprise. I mean, this is first round talent that you got.
That's a big jump. That's a career high by a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, we always say, you know, the adage is you can't win your league in the first round, but you can lose it. But you can win your league with picks like Kyle Schwarber, where you got him ADP of 87 last year, where you're getting first round talent in the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds. Kyle Schwarber was going with that whole group of DH only players that we had a whole, I think, like episode about, or at least a big string about, where you're just like, you could go with Rooker, Ozuna, or Schwarber. And I think most of the time, most of us were taking Rooker just because he was adding to all the categories. Schwarber was a 1B, and you could have gone either way, but there are plenty of people that would have went Ozuna just because of the consistent power that you were getting as well. So like, you felt as though you couldn't go wrong with that group, but you weren't getting more than one of them either. Well, that's not true. Didn't you grab the Rooker and somebody else in one league, didn't you? And then with the hope that Rooker would get the outfield eligibility in short order. It did not come in short order. It did come. Wait, didn't it? Yeah, it did come at some point.
It did.
But it was not short order.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had Ohtani and Rooker.
That's what it was. It was Ohtani.
I was using Ohtani, and I couldn't use Ohtani as a pitcher. By the time Ohtani was pitching,
Rooker
had gotten his outfield eligibility.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move into the speed. Kevin, any other power surprises that you didn't throw on here that are worth kind of just throwing out there as just like a name to look at?
No, most of the other names that I at least glanced at and considered. Oh, there was one other, but you mentioned most of my would have been honorable mention names. I will, the change of scenery was very nice for Michael Busch, right? And yes, the 261 average to go with those well over 30 home runs, 90 RBI. That was really nice.
Yes. Michael Busch was definitely here on my list as somebody who outperformed not only those volume stats, but just the plate appearances as well, which obviously came, I'm thinking of somebody completely different. He was spot on with his projections, pretty close to it. PLV projections had him at only 21 less plate appearances than he actually got. So that makes those extra 15 home runs and extra 22 RBIs that much more pertinent. And then, yes, as you mentioned, the added bump in batting average from what the projections thought he would do made a big difference as well. I'm going to let you start us off here in the speed categories, Kevin, as we hit our runs and stolen bases. Now, I'm going to preface this that usually we say this in season, that these are the speed categories, so it's worth thinking about both. I will guarantee you that at least one of my choices, I'm only focused on one. One of those two categories. But talk to me about the one that stood out to you.
Yeah. I think most people were surprised at how much Trevor Story was running and realized that he was being very successful. As I told you before we started recording, I did not realize that Trevor Story only got caught one time in 32 appearances. The craziest thing about this to me is that's over a 50% jump to what he did 4 seasons ago. The last time he hit 20, he hit 20 on the nose. It's been 7 seasons ago since he even approached 30, when he had 27 stolen bases, to do this at 32 years of age and do it without getting caught.
Yes.
Is the crazy part. And that part, and being with the same team for 4 of those seasons. Yes. He's been battling those injuries in the past. He hasn't even hit 400 plate appearances with the Red Sox until this season, but just the fact that they turned him loose so often and he was so successful leads me to believe that, no, we're not going to project him for 30 stolen bases next year, but I'm probably going to have 20 in the back of my mind when we're preparing for the shortstop position in 2026 drafts. He won't be projected for that many. I mean, it's been for Nick, by next season, it will have been 5 years since he's done that more than just in 2025. So he won't even be projected for 20, I don't think. But that's probably the number I'm going to put there just due to how efficient he was and the Red Sox letting him continue to run.
Yeah, just the fact, because he was so efficient, I can't imagine that he doesn't continue. I mean, yeah. If the concern always revolved around his health, it's like, hey, he's not going to run because he's been hurt so much, and we expect the Red Sox don't want him to hurt himself again. That's gone, right? That any kind of concern there has been squashed. I can't imagine, especially with the amount of money that he's being paid and the what he's able to do this year on as consistently as he was doing it. There's no reason. He finally got caught at the end of September. And I can't imagine that's going to be the reason they're like, all right, you're done. You got caught. Sorry, you're done. So yeah, I would expect there to be quite a few stolen base opportunities for Trevor Story next year as well. It's funny, cause I have two names on here, and one of them I don't think is going to be almost shouldn't have been a surprise based on what he was able to do last year. But I think it was a surprise based on the fact that he didn't even come close. Well, he didn't come that close to his playing time from last year. And that is Zach Neto of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. As he hit the 26 stolen bases compared to last year's 30. The stolen bases, I guess, wasn't really the focus here, because again, that's what was kind of expected out of him as well, along with the added power. It was the fact that in 50 or so less plate appearances, he scored an extra 12 runs based on from last year. And I think that there was ultimately some concerns, if you will, with what he might do scoring runs with the Angels, where he might sit in that lineup, what the rest of that team will do for him to knock him in. And at least PL projections were spot on. He only had seven more plate appearances than they projected him to have. And he still scored 18 more runs than projected, on top of that, while having pretty much a flush batting average for what they expected out of that as well. So Zach Neto, because again, I was really trying to hit the nail on the head with looking for guys that hit their projected playing time, but still outperformed their per plate appearance average in these volume stats, showing me that this is the type of player who could outperform what all these projections, especially somebody younger with less experience in the majors, less stats for these projections to pull from, going above and beyond that. I'm going to take the projection, I think, of Neto and guys like him a little bit more seriously than I might have from the year prior, because now we've got a little bit more data to pull from at the major league level. He's been consistent. And so these projections that we're all relying on, I think, have a little bit more meat on the bone to actually pull from as well. Like I say, projecting playing time is the hardest thing. The next hardest thing is projecting young players with not a lot of data to go by. Did you have Neto anywhere? Is this a surprise? Is basically the stat line too close to what you expected to be really considered a surprise, or any feelings on Neto here?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would attribute the extra runs to the lineup. Joe Adell, Trout was healthy for a lot of the season, and so lineup in general. But when you bring up consistency, that's what I was looking at while you were talking. And when you use that word, I was sitting here nodding, right? It's crazy. As young as he is, he has almost 1,500 plate appearances, right? Mm-hmm. His walk percentage has been roughly 6% all three seasons he's played at the major league level. His strikeout rate did spike a pretty good amount this season. Still not horrible, but if we get that back down to what we saw in 2023 and 2024, he's going to be that much better going forward. And then the results, you know, average and OBP almost identical in 2025 to what they were in 2024. And these plate appearances, I think Zach Neto has become a player that we can, in spite of being frustrating early this season due to we were waiting on him to come back. Well, that will probably held his, draft, his ADP down a little bit. He only had 128 games, but it just that consistency you talked about is going to make him a very popular pick and probably somebody with quite a bit higher ADP as long as we think he's healthy going into 2026 and we saw in 2025.
It doesn't hurt that he started 110 games in the leadoff position this year.
Exactly.
In last year, he started one game in that leadoff position. And so the fact that even though he was leading off, he didn't play all season. He had some ups and downs, but he was still able to hit, you know, that plate because of where he was in that lineup. He was able to get close to that plate appearance expectations, even though those projections were probably basing him either being a little bit further down in the lineup, if not in the bottom third of the lineup. And so I would expect him to hold on to that spot going into 2026 as well.
Yeah. In 27 less games, he only had about 10 games worth of less plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way I'm looking at that due to hitting leadoff.
Yeah. Well, he won't be the last leadoff hitter we talk about, on this episode. I don't know what else there is to say about Josh Naylor, except let's just throw him out there. It's like,
and the stat Uncle Ted put up there a few minutes ago, not realizing that we would be talking about Josh Naylor is the most crazy thing about it to me. 3%, third percentile sprint speed, Major League Baseball. He's out there stealing 30 bases
for two teams. It's not as though he wasn't stealing in Arizona. And like, I know we all started noticing it in Seattle, like when after he was traded, but like, it wasn't as if he wasn't stealing in Arizona. Just Seattle, just like, hey, if you're stealing bases, why don't you just keep doing that?
If you flip flopped his home run and stolen base numbers, I'd still be surprised stolen base numbers.
Absolutely. Any other names? I'm like, I put Josh Naylor here as my lane, but there's like, we've been talking about him all season, or at least the second half of the season. Any other speedsters or surprise speedsters, that kind of just like popped out at you, that you just didn't, you know, spend a lot of time getting into it, but worth mentioning?
Well, we can go right to the top of the player radar, and, you know, that hope for so many years that Juan Soto would actually attempt stolen bases, to have a 43-38 season. I think that's what we were talking about when we were wishing that he would make more attempts, and that's over 30 stolen bases more than he had last season. And he only had two more plate appearances and he had 31 more stolen bases.
Crazy. The other names that pop up in stolen bases on my list, not a surprise, Victor Scott the second, mostly based on opportunities and taking advantage of them and playing time. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he stole more bases than 23 more bases than he was projected. And the biggest surprise here is ultimately Byron Buxton. We talked about Trevor Story being able to stay healthy and take advantage of that. Byron Buxton across the board, obviously, hitting, above what would be projected for him based on number of plate appearances, but only 88 more plate appearances than PL had projected him for. But with that came an extra 16 stolen bases and 40 runs scored. So Byron Buxton, we'll see if he can continue that next year. And then again, Uncle Ted throwing out a shout out for him. He mentioned him earlier on in the chat, Isaac Collins.
Yes.
Completely based on opportunity being given to him and then running with it. Right. He was not drafted in the main event from what I can, from what I was going through. So obviously anybody who was able to take advantage of that got him through Fab, and just ran with it literally and figuratively. So puns included here. So those are some fun names to look at. And, we always say it, stolen bases you can stream, but when somebody it's easier to stream those stolen bases earlier in the season, because as soon as you start seeing somebody kind of like get into a rhythm and you realize they're going to be more consistent, even if it is a Josh Naylor or an Isaac Collins in this case, like they're going to end up on people's teams and they're not going to end up going back into the pool most of the time. So keep an eye on those kind of flows or ebbs and flows of who's actually running because it's a good matchup and who's running because they're just good at running. Kevin going, we're going to cut this in a weird spot. Usually we cut this at the end of the categories, but we're kind of flowing through here. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break and we'll get into the opportunity categories right after this. All right, Kevin, jump right into our opportunities here. Somebody I alluded to earlier on in the episode, the only hitter that PL projections had projected for the exact amount of playing appearances that they actually received in the 2025 season, George Springer, which was a big surprise. I think just me looking at it, and then you couldn't guess earlier when I was quizzing you on it.
Not only could I not guess, I told you it's the one. I said it's not George Springer. Yeah. That was my answer. Of all the players you had listed, I said not that one, but that one.
Yeah. But because he was able to, your comment though was, we're not banking. Most of the projections are not banking in expected injuries, and he didn't really get. I mean, he was on the IL. I think it might have just been the concussion IL if I'm remembering correctly. So it wasn't even the full, 10 or 15 days. But same amount of plate appearances. With that came not only added RBI, added home runs, added runs, even a couple more stolen bases than were expected. Based on his projections, a 0.058 increase in what they expected out of that batting average. And because you hit the volume of plate appearances, that's a big boost to whatever you'd projected your team to have in your batting average category. Like, we could talk about all these guys who had a boost in batting average, but if it was only, an extra of 50 or 100 at bats, it's not making as much of an impact, right? This is spot on. So that made that 0.058 increase in batting average from what you might have been projecting him to have that much more powerful. What can we kind of take out of this? Like, is this a fluke? Is like in the fact that George Springer was able to stay healthy and able to come back from what most of us kind of saw as a continuous trend downward over the last two seasons prior, and continue in, like, what do we get out of this as far as going into 2026?
I think, and because of the way projections typically work, he will get a boost. I think we have to boost it, the projections here, and they will once again naturally due to the results, but I think we need to believe them, I guess, is my point. Because his max EV was back up, his barrel percentage got back to what we hadn't seen. Higher than, but his previous high was in 2021, mm-hmm. and he exceeded that. His hard hit rate up, highest of his career. So I think we do have to believe a lot of this. Like, this was the best George Springer we've ever seen in many ways at this age. But there's skills that we look at when we're trying to determine if things are real or not. So in spite of the fact that he's going to be 36 years old next season, mm-hmm. I think we have to believe that he is going to maintain some of this, not nearly all of it, of course. I'll be curious to see how much of the game's projections give him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ultimately up to them. we won't know until some of these projections start coming out. And we should start seeing right. them toward the end of the month, going into right. Into November. So we won't have to wait too long. Basically, once the playoffs are over, we'll start seeing them come out without fail. I said you can't. It's hard to predict batting average. Plate appearances or volume or playing time. And then injury. And then how do you bake in just age? We talk about age to level with prospects, but age to, you know, production as your body starts to break down. And I'm saying this. 36 year olds, that's ridiculous. But I mean, it's just, George Springer's been playing his whole life. Like, it's just
right.
gonna happen.
I think, and people are gonna be listening to this episode and be screaming about the 340 BABIP. Yes, we cannot expect him to have a 340 BABIP again next season, but it's not something he's never done before. And his career BABIP is much higher than the 245 we saw in 2024. So even if that BABIP comes down quite a bit, but stays at his career number or higher, which he had not been at since 2019, he had not been at his career BABIP. And he's been pulling that career number down since 2019 a lot. If we can even get him to what his career numbers would have been up through 2019, you know, 305, 310 BABIP, if he even maintains that, he's going to maintain a lot of this production.
I'm going to jump into my next guy here only because he kind of fits into that same mold where somehow he hit very close to the projected plate appearances, but made a big difference in your batting average, especially at the position that you had him in. And that's Shea Langeliers. I'm going to throw up his 2024 process chart, plus chart, rolling chart. And as you can see, it's all completely, if anybody's watching, you can see this, but I'll just verbalize it, obviously, for those listening. It's completely powered by power. Everything that makes it every time that white line goes above the 100 mark, which is that average mark, it's because of the power. The contact, his decision making from 2024, not playing a role here. All right. So, of course, the projections are going to have that into consideration as they project him for a, you know, much lower batting average than he ended up giving you this year. So that's what makes him a pleasant surprise for this year. And really, I mean, he hit the plate appearances somewhat based on the fact that he missed a bunch of time in the middle of the season, right? But also just because he was a lot more consistent at the plate throughout the season that you could feel comfortable keeping him in. And at the catcher position, you're not typically rotating that out, especially in a two catcher league, right? And unless you're hurt for a long period of time, which, you know, he did miss some time in the middle of the season, so he would have been out of your lineup for a bit. But he was doing so well in the first half of the season that I don't think he was dropped in a bunch of places and then having to put him back in, that you probably got like close to 100% of his production in your lineup throughout the course of the season as well. But he made a lot of changes that brought his contact up, his decision making got better as the season progressed as well. So this brought him in, and if I can get this other tab pulled up fast enough, Shea with a 0.04 increase in batting average from what was projected for him at that catcher position. We talk about how the catcher position doesn't hurt your batting average as much because there are typically less plate appearances, unless you're getting those two guys that you talked about that you always tried to get in your drafts that are going to get you 550 plate appearances or more, because that's like an added player. Shea Lingelier is still, he did the opposite though. He was able to help you and he outperformed all of his other expected projected volume categories as well, if not by a whole lot, but you know, enough, with 12 more runs than that was projected, 9 more RBI, actually no, 9 more home runs, 6 more RBI. So Shea Lingelier's was a nice surprise, especially at the position. Now he's no Ben Rice, right? But still a nice surprise overall. All right, you got one more. You have at least one name on here though that was a surprise in the opportunity, and another name that I wanted to put on here but I kept them off just due to plate appearances. Talk to me about your choice in the opportunity here.
Well, so for me, opportunity, that's exactly why I did put him on here,
right?
Because it was the opportunity, it was those plate appearances, and it's due to because he led off for much of the season and then was amazing, and that's Geraldo Perdomo in Arizona. Fantastic season, but I don't know that a lot of people, unless he was on your fantasy team, mm-hmm. I don't know if people realize just how good Perdomo was, as in the 12th overall hitter in Roto Fantasy for the season at an ADP plus 400, but 720 plate appearances. That's exactly why I put him in here. And then if you're going to give me a 290 batting average, a 2020 season, and almost 100 each of RBI and runs scored, 2 runs short, but did have 100 RBI, that is absolutely phenomenal at shortstop for Geraldo Perdomo on the season. Those 720 plate appearances, I understand how you were selecting your players for these categories, but this is the one category that's why I selected him.
Yeah, it was the category, it's in the name, right? I mean, so I definitely don't fault you for picking him. And I just want to check what his actual ADP here is. ADP was 442. He was only drafted in 16 out of 57 main event drafts during that part of the season. All these drafts happen obviously in the end of March. And so
not even a third, actually.
Crazy that, you know, he can make that much of an impact off of the wire. Like we should maybe even do a whole episode like who made the most impact off the wire. Perdomo's going to be at the top, or if not, you know, at the top, within the top 5 of impactful free agent guys that, you know, you would have had on your team the entire season from the time that you actually, you know, grabbed him and put him on your rosters. Yeah. I didn't realize he wasn't on any of my teams. I'm in that boat that you suggested that, like, if he wasn't on your team, you probably didn't realize how good he was doing until he was doing it against you.
Right.
All right. Well, let's get into some surprise pitchers as well. As we move into our volume category, we'll continue with volume here and we'll get into ratios in just a bit. Wins and strikeouts. I'm gonna let you go second only because I like yours better. So I'll get mine out of the way here. Well, mine are boring. My guys are boring. I tried. There were some. Max Fried jumped out at me. He was somebody that popped up in the wins category. But you know, you kind of almost, even though he wasn't projected, at least by PL projections, to get as many wins as he did, you still kind of expected it because he was on the Yankees. Carlos Rodon was another one. Again, Yankees. Garrett Crochet was another one, but the one that stood out to me, again, not because of all the extra innings that they threw compared to projection, but just the fact that they were able to walk into way more wins than maybe expected, was Casey Mize. 7 more wins than projected, with only 39 more innings pitched. You know, of course, extra innings will help you, you know, get to that win. If you can get into the, you know, through the fifth, into the sixth, into the seventh and not tax your bullpen more, you're going to put yourself in a position to hold on to that win and not rely on your bullpen to hold on to it for you more often. And that's what Casey Mize was able to do. With that came, you know, more strikeouts than were projected, not at the expense of his ratios either. So at least compared to projections, 276 main event ADP with those seven more wins than maybe you had projected for. If you know, and most of the projections are pretty, you know, they're going to be off here or there and wins, but there's only so many wins that you can be off by. And it's only going to be based on, because they're all using the same team context, the same offensive context. It's just a matter of whether or not you think he's going to go, that pitcher is going to be able to go deep enough into games consistently to qualify for the win, in conjunction with, you know, the offense being good enough to put them in a position to win as well. So Casey Mize was one that that stood out to me, again, based on the innings pitched. And then the other one that I did lean toward the starting pitching, but somebody that's popping out right now as I'm just kind of glancing through here is Edwin Uceta. He hit my requirement for innings pitched being in line with only 12. He only pitched 12 more innings than was projected, and obviously qualified for seven more wins than would be projected. This is a situation where you just don't know, right? It's like, you don't know how to, you can't predict wins in a reliever. We talk about this every year. It's like, if you find that guy who's being put into the position to be the first man up out of the bullpen as a follower, or as just like coming into the fourth inning, because there's a lot of guys in that rotation that can't go through into the fifth inning, then sure, let's take advantage of that. But you couldn't necessarily predict that somebody like Edwin Uceta was going to get all of these wins, no matter how good he is as a reliever. You're not always chasing wins. We're always talking about bringing in relievers to stabilize your ratios. Logan Webb was the actual name, though, that I had on my list as somebody who ended up with more strikeouts. And this is less for the wins category than it was for the strikeouts, because he pretty much was right in line with what you projected him to get for wins. But getting an added that's the wrong Web. That's Jacob Webb. There we go. Logan Webb, 49 more strikeouts than was projected, because I mean, Logan Webb, as good as anybody thinks he is, you didn't always necessarily draft Logan Webb for the strikeouts. So to get the extra 50 or so strikeouts than what a projection system might have had him on, in line for, you know, it didn't necessarily come at the expense of his ratios either. Did underperform his ERA slightly at a, you know, 0.19 lowering of that projection, but ultimately still somebody that you know, you didn't really hurt you in those categories, while adding in maybe more, again, more strikeouts than you had projected your team to have after draft day was over. And obviously he was drafted everywhere. He was a top 100 player in the main event. So at least when you are able to get at least what you project out of your pitcher, especially when you're drafting somebody within the top 100, and then get a little bit more than that, then that's a pleasant surprise in my book.
100%.
So I already alluded to it. I said it outright. I didn't even allude. Your picks are way cooler than mine, or way more fun to talk about than mine. So just dive right in, Kevin.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's only a little surprising. I don't think anybody is surprised that Brian Wu had a great season, but how great it was surprising, because in the NFBC main event, he was the fifth Seattle Mariner pitcher drafted, and he was the fourth overall pitcher in fantasy baseball on the season. So it was a surprise. And both wins, 15 wins, were never really going to project that many. There is the luck involved with how the offense is performing that day, how the bullpen performs. Of course, you can help that by going deeper in the game. He did get up there approaching 200 mm-hmm. innings, but it spiked his strikeout rate back to what it had been in 2023. So that was his strikeouts back up, and then those extra wins. So he was covering both wins and Ks for our category. And where he was drafted in the 9th round of main events, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I spoke a lot about wins, and you really touched on wins even just with Wu. I'm glad to hear you talk about strikeouts as well. And strikeouts are all volume-based, right? It's like if you can stay in the game longer, even if you're not a strong K per nine or a K percentage type of pitcher, if you can go deep into games and be consistent throughout the year, that total is still going to add up, right? You're still going to add those total strikeouts into your final stat line. And in a roto league, that's what matters the most. In a head-to-head league, it matters a little bit less because you need as much volume in a short period of time as you can to win your matchup. But in your roto leagues, which is what we talk about most of the time, I mean, K per nine doesn't matter if the guy can go 200 innings. You know what I mean? Like K per nine for somebody who goes 200 innings is way less impressive, or way less, I care less about it than my guy who's only going to go $1.50 or $1.25 on the season. So when you can approach 200 innings, like you mentioned with Brian Wu, that's gonna make a big difference. But talk to me about your other guy, the bigger surprise, and in the same vein as Yusetta.
Yeah, exactly. And with even more wins, and we've been talking about this ever since we started doing the show, Adam. Our first season, it was Brent Suter. Man, can we figure out which guy, and we know the wins are volatile, but can we figure out which guy is going to get these opportunities? Right. And I feel like with Adrian Morjon, we could have. I did not. Yes, I had him on a couple of teams, on and off of those teams, but I feel like when I go back and look at his game log, and what probably was a little bit is in the past, he hasn't had a great whip. So he's not the type of player that I was looking for when we're looking at the relievers, because as you just mentioned, we're typically looking at them as ratio stabilizers. Yeah, then we'll look at, can they snag a win or a save as an added bonus if that's a tiebreaker between a couple guys. That's the guy we're going to take. And so Morjon wasn't even really under consideration until we're into the season a ways and realize, okay, he has a much better whip this season than he has had in the past. So now he's on our waterfall. We talk about having a long waterfall of these guys every week, but this is the type of guy that if you landed on him, he probably stayed in your lineup. And if so, then you were getting these wins and they did not come in bunches. They were spread throughout the season after he only had one in April. So he averaged 2.5 wins a month the rest of the season. 13 wins on the season. That's what Tarik Skubal had. That's what Framber Valdez had, right? Yeah. And it you kind of have to luck into this. But I feel like after 2 or 3 months, we could have found Morjon. I didn't. But I feel like there were times that I could have. And I'm a little upset that I didn't, because he was... As I said, we can't project these wins, but we can figure out who's being put into a situation where it's possible. And he was all season long. And from the beginning of May to the end of the season, kept accumulating the wins.
See, I thought I did find Adrian Morjon at the beginning of the season, but his name was actually Jason Adam.
Right, exactly.
It was actually his teammate who outperformed his win projections, of course, but most of those came in the beginning of the season, where he seemed like he was just racking up a bunch of wins in the end of games. The unfortunate is, like, he was already in that position to do that. He had already shown us what kind of a pitcher was, and then he took the wrong turn at least in like the second half of the season as well. So it's like he was off of most of my teams by then, but because he wasn't Adrian Morion in that case, plus, you know, the bullpen was obviously shored up most of the season by Robert Suarez. So you didn't have these guys to vulture the wins. Usually you have these guys on your start of your season because you think that they might chance into a save opportunity or two. And then if you happen to luck into an extra inning win or somebody put into a position a little bit earlier in the game, like you're talking about, great. But the typical mindset of somebody drafting, if you're drafting somebody, a reliever that's not a closer, is because you think that they're either next in line for a closer position, they're battling for a closer position. You're thinking closer, right? You're thinking saves. And if you can change your mindset to be like, listen, how often am I actually getting lucky enough and I'm holding on to this guy like a Jason Adam who moves into a closer position? How often does that happen versus can I use my attention a little bit in a different way going into next year's drafts? Or if I'm going to draft a reliever, should I be looking at relievers that the team is going to put in a position to be first man up? Out of the bullpen, to be the guy that may come in the 10th inning after the closer has already been used. So now you're still in a win situation. Can you do a better job of vulturing these wins from the jump rather than, and you do it, I mean, if you pick the right guy, that the wins are a bonus, right? Because as you mentioned, like we're talking about these guys as ratio stabilizers most of the season anyway. So they're helping you already, right? At least in theory. And if they stop helping, you drop them. It's no science there. No shocker in Mort 11. But yeah, so if you can focus the attention to pick up those guys that are going to vulture those wins rather than luck into saves, there might be something there. So again, Your call-outs are more interesting in because that there's more to talk about, I think, ultimately. But let's go right into ratios now. And yeah, you stayed in line with how we usually use this category. I ended up going with some players that the ratios were just better than we expected in their starters, and so they were more of a surprise. And both of these guys were in most scenarios not on someone's team all season long, right? They were streamers for most of the time. Maybe you streamed a couple of their starts back to back to back, but they probably, even in 15 teamers, they weren't on your roster, or at least weren't in your starting nine or seven, or whatever, however many pitchers you have on your rosters in your format. They weren't starting for you every single week. And the names that popped up to me first was Jack Kochanowicz, and most of his stuff came in the beginning of the season. But overall, when it was all said and done, he wasn't on most starting, and he was picked up in most scenarios, only drafted in 6 out of 57. Main events with an ADP of 447. But when it was all said and done, if he was in your roster, he was in your starting for the entire season, he did 2 runs better in the ERA department and a 0.41 better in the WHIP department from what he was projected to do, while still hitting the expected innings pitch. He actually pitched 32 more innings than at least PL projections had him down for as well. So that comes with an extra 23 strikeouts, which is, you know, that's nice. But ultimately, you were streaming Jack Kochanowicz in friendly situations and most likely got the best of that in those scenarios. He had a couple blowups like every pitcher does, and then you move on and it's fine. But ultimately, it was a nice surprise to be like, hey, I'm rolling the dice on this guy who really only has one pitch. And he was able to expand on that throughout most of the first half of the season and give you some, you know, nice cushion in those streams where you were ultimately rolling the dice most of the time. And then Kay Bovich was the other one. Kay Bovich might have been on more people's teams for a longer period of time. He was drafted in all 57 main events with an ADP of right around 350, almost exactly 350, actually. But ultimately, he just became somebody that was probably more consistent than we might have expected. And we talked, Kay Bovich came up a lot in your suggestions for streamers throughout the course of the season, especially in 12 teamers. But I venture to guess he did not stay on everybody's roster all season long as well, even in the main event in the 15 teamers. And so when you were able to stream in a similar vein to Jack Kochanowicz, it was like, it was a nice pleasant surprise to see him. I mean, you were probably streaming him for the strikeouts and for him to get his ERA down to 0.7 lower than the projections and, you know, 0.16 lower than the WHIP projections. That was a nice surprise, as, you know, maybe made you more confident to kind of stream him in more difficult situations or ones that you might have not taken the chance on with other players because of the consistency throughout the course of the season. Any thoughts on either one of those, either one of my picks here, Kevin? Did they surprise you throughout the season on any of your teams, or any other thoughts on them?
They did. I love these picks. And Cade Povich, it's intriguing to me when you said he came up a lot throughout the season. I think Baltimore in general did. We talked about quite a few Baltimore pitchers throughout the year. Just in general, the team was kind of down. But, you know, and Uncle Ted brings up Trevor Rogers. Neither one of us wrote his name down, but to be the 15th overall pitcher with a WHIP of under one and an ERA under two. He had an ERA under four one time in his career. So this has to be surprising as well. I think all the Baltimore in general, they weren't all rostered like we thought they would be, because we thought Baltimore was going to be this juggernaut of a team. When the team faltered, they weren't winning games. We weren't really big fans of any of the pitching staff. So they were available to us throughout the year, at least early in the season. Trevor Rogers specifically, he's the type of player. I wonder how many times was he picked up and dropped before somebody finally held on to him?
Right.
To feel like this is real, not just I got lucky with the stream that I made. Mm-hmm. Like, it was probably the second or third player in some leagues that had him before the ones that held on to him, and a couple other players really kicking themselves. But yeah, Cade Povich, loved him throughout the year. Oh, the Baltimore guys, and I think that kind of leads to a thing. Another guy that an honorable mention in this kind of the same vein, because the team underperformed. I didn't realize Brady Singer got to 14 wins. I knew he was in my lineup quite often early in the year, and then he started backing off a little bit and wasn't as good, and I benched him more often. Didn't realize he got to 14 wins. So I think some of the times players like Cade Povich on a team that is underperforming ends up going under the radar.
Yeah, I mean, and I had his numbers pulled up in a second ago, and you look at him, you're like, well, actually, Cade Povich's ratios were not good. Like, ultimately, didn't end the season that well, but they were.
Used him, were they good?
Exactly. If you used them, were they good? Yeah. Great. And ultimately, were they better than the projections? And he was still drafted everywhere, right? Cade Povich was still drafted everywhere. And so whether or not you believe the projections or not, he still hit what those projections were and then did a little bit better than that. So you obviously had a little bit of faith in drafting him and then utilizing him in those situations. Trevor Rogers, the more obvious Baltimore choice, as I have his numbers up here as well. And you kind of talked poetic about his situation. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. I know I picked him up once and then dropped him and then I was not the lucky one to hold on to him in those situations.
I am certain there are leagues that I picked him up more than once and did not hold on to him.
Bray Stinger's a good call out, man. He in the wins category, three more wins than were projected. But he had only three more innings pitched than were projected as well. So this is one of those very rare circumstances where, yeah, at least PL projections had it spot on. So that was, I remember looking at him as I was going through this list as well. Anybody else in the ratio category though, Kevin, that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah. A guy we talked about, and it was kind of fitting, Sharm Armstrong in Texas, and to go along with his nice 2.31 ERA and 0.81 WHIP. We did get four wins. That's not a lot. Three or four is typically what a reliever is going to be projected for, and then nine saves. But we kind of stumbled into those saves because we liked Sean Armstrong just before he got him as a pickup for ratios. So that's why, that's an added bonus of why we talk about that category mm-hmm. all season long. If you picked him up for that ratio help, all of a sudden you ended up with a handful of saves as a bonus. And that's why I used Sean Armstrong here with the, and I think he's top 15 in innings for relievers, just 74 innings. So he was just one short of 75. I think we had 15 pitchers, relief pitchers reach that number with a strikeout per inning, 74 strikeouts. I know that's not what we're really looking for, but it helps when we're looking at other categories, if they can keep up in the categories we're not looking at specifically as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that one as well. And he outperformed his projections a decent amount as well in the ratio categories, even as a reliever. So it's nice to kind of see that as well. All right. A couple of honorable mentions. I mean, we talked about Trevor Rogers, obviously kind of breaking the mold there. Tyler Molly was a nice little surprise as he was coming back. Didn't know really what to expect out of him. Still drafted in majority of places. So most people were able to get what they could out of him and obviously take advantage of that lowered ERA and lowered WHIP than what you might have projected your teams for. Let's see. Andrew Abbott is a big one, especially in the first two thirds of the season. We've got, Uncle Ted throws out Nathan Eovaldi.
I was gonna bring up Eovaldi in that, yes, when he's healthy, we know what he can do. We know he can be absolutely amazing, but he even surpassed that. Mm-hmm. An ERA under two and a WHIP under one, just absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal. And I would say anybody that drafted him, if you'd have said you're gonna get 130 innings, we'd take that in a heartbeat.
Sure. Yeah, all day and twice on Sunday. All right, well, let's get into the fourth most difficult thing to project, and that is saves. Kevin, why don't you start us off this one? I stole the starting gate on the last two categories. So what was a pleasant surprise in the saves category for you?
Well, it wasn't necessarily that he got the saves. Aroldis Chapman. That's who I'm talking about here. 32 saves for your Boston Red Sox. And that isn't the huge surprise to me. The surprise is that he got the job and held it, and he was able to hold it because of the WHIP. And this is what's held him back his entire career. Even when he's been really good, this has been his fault. And to have a 0.70 WHIP over the entire season was phenomenal and led to him continuing to get those ninth inning opportunities and then the 32 saves that he converted.
Yeah, I mean, this is somebody who was drafted everywhere because – I mean, I wasn't one. I didn't think Chapman was the closer going into the season, but enough people did, or at least enough people saw the situation as being open, right? Yep. We talked a lot about Liam Hendricks being the guy. Like, I was very confident that was going to be, yep, Obviously, I was very wrong in that scenario. But that leads me to the names I have on my list also didn't have the job. And that's what that right. made that obviously these were my names are a little bit lower hanging fruit because nobody was drafting them because you never expected them to find their way into the position. Will Vest was drafted in three of the main events, but Emilio Pagan was not drafted anywhere. And that's ultimately because he neither one of these guys had the job. We all expected Detroit to have a rotation, and they did for like at least the first month and a half of the season. Never expected them to kind of settle on anybody, and they finally did for the majority of the season. Now they made trades at the deadline, but Will Vest still got you 22 more saves than you might have expected, or at least more than PLV's projections had him at. Emilio Pagan, obviously 31 more saves than you could be projected for when you're not projected for any. And so that helps when you are finding your way into a position that didn't exist. And so obviously this was another free agent boost that would be right up there with Perdomo, with guys there, Perdomo and anybody else that might've been drafted or picked up out of free agency early on in the season. Once it was pretty clear that he was going to be moved into that position, once Diaz was moved and Pagan was going to be Francona's favorite choice at the end of games for Cincinnati. Neither one of these guys particularly helped you the same way that Chapman did in the ratios, but they definitely didn't hurt you. Pagan doing much better, actually, than I expected, you know, with a 1.14 boost in your ERA compared to what it was projected. And Will Vest also pretty much hitting his projections, not hurting you in that area as well. So that's a nice little, you can't say the same thing about, you know, everybody who was a surprise in the, in this category. But most of the time, somebody who's moving into this category, you got that job for a reason. And so most of these guys that are surprised that will throw some honorable mentions in a second, they helped your ERA and your WHIP by default, just because their team wanted to put them in those positions to get you those saves if they didn't trust in most scenarios. There's always examples of otherwise, but yeah, I mean, Chapman, I think is probably the best one just because he was drafted everywhere. And you didn't expect, but you weren't expecting the number of saves and the volume that you got out of him, especially in the ratio category and then impacting your ratios that much more than you were as well. So, I mean, what do you take from that going into 2026, Kevin? Like when you're looking at the saves category, like I mean, there's a lot of surprises, and like I'll just go down and like besides the guys that we all got off free agency
guys right at the top are surprises right in the number mm-hmm. right. Carlos Estevez, right? I don't think anybody would have expected any Kansas City Royals reliever to get 42 saves, but after a couple of games early in the season when he didn't go back to back and then with a couple of injuries in the bullpen, all of a sudden Estevez was the only ninth inning guy Kansas City used.
Right.
A similar reason, third most saves in the league, Andrés Muñoz. We've seen in the past him get used more in other high leverage situations earlier in the game, right? Andrés Muñoz for several seasons now has been a guy that we thought could do this, but we had to accept the fact that he wasn't always saved for the ninth inning. So, you know, two of the top three guys in total number of saves in baseball, it's surprising to me that they got those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of guys that were able to get picked up at some point during the season. You mentioned, you know, Estevez was drafted everywhere, but between Pagan, Vest, and Palencia in Chicago, you know, there were guys that got you not only double-digit saves, but 20, 30 saves that you got off the wire. It's Dennis just a
Santana
matter
early in the year.
Yeah, and tour and the end.
At the end, beginning and in the end.
If you held on to him, Cade Smith. I mean, that's a situation nobody could have predicted, obviously, in Cleveland, moving into that position. But you did have a general sense that Cade Smith was the guy. And so, does this put?
And he was fairly highly rostered at by then because of his ratios, and he was actually getting a lot of strikeouts for a reliever as well. So that was cool.
I mean, he was drafted in 53 out of the 57 main events. So I don't know that he was held on all of those teams all season, but he was definitely picked up. If anyone was listening to it, like ratio, or like thinking about their ratios to your point as well. Mm-hmm. Always interesting to kind of, I literally just did a whole spiel about, hey, we think about relievers because they can move into a closer position, but how often does that actually happen? The thing is that a lot of these guys weren't drafted, and you had to pick them up in free agency anyway. So like you got the most out of these guys because you didn't draft them, because you were able to pick them off free agency. It's just a matter of getting your timing right. And sometimes obviously that's the most difficult part when you're looking at four other holes you need to fill. And are you going to fill one of those holes with a reliever that could possibly move into a closer spot in 3 weeks? And it's just a hard trigger to pull. All right, Kevin, close me out here with wild card options. And if I see anybody that pops up on my list as well, I'll throw them out there. But who do you have? I didn't even look if you wrote anybody on the section. So
I didn't write it down, but this was easy for me. In only two main event leagues was Nick Kurtz drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the 29th overall hitter for the entire season, even though we had to wait for him for a little while, and in 489 plate appearances, so 240 less plate appearances than some guys at the top of the player rater, he finished 29th in the league. That is absolutely amazing. By far, I think the best of the, and we had a few this season, but I think by far the best in-season ad in fantasy baseball this season for what he gave us once he came up.
Yeah, and once he got going, that was a good call out. I mean, I'll just, my own personal low-hanging fruit is, I already mentioned him earlier in the show, but Addison Barger, huge surprise for me. Mm-hmm. Didn't have him anywhere, unfortunately. I was too slow to grabbing him when he started heating up and got into a different position, but he wasn't, another guy was not drafted anywhere. Obviously hit way higher in, you know, hit way more plate appearances than he was projected to, and took full advantage of that. And so did the Blue Jays, and didn't hurt you in your batting average. Got all those counting stats, that you might not have been planning for. And so nice little addition there, and multi-position eligibility in most places, didn't hurt either.
A good one as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, Quinn Priester, we didn't mention Quinn Priester.
I was good. Yep. He was actually had a higher ADP. I forget who we were talking about at the time. It was when we were talking about wins. Oh, he had a higher ADP than Morjan. He was drafted after Adrian Morjan,
mm-hmm,
at 13 wins as well, only as a starter.
Yeah. But he only drafted in seven main event drafts. Yeah.
Well after pick 700 on average.
And, you know, I know he had some ups and downs, but ultimately, man, at the end, when it's all said and done, you know, 99 more strikeouts than projected, a much lower whip and a much lower ERA than projections had him down for as well. And yeah, as you said, those wins didn't come out of nowhere, but they felt like it.
Noah Cameron for Kansas City. Mm-hmm. He could have been a nice wild card, but I don't know he would have been on anyone's wild card list. I don't think anybody was expecting, even if he did get a call, to perform anything like what he did, and ratios, and then 9 wins and the limited number of starts he had. So he was great all around as well.
Yeah. Junior Caminero, another rookie, obviously, but it was
great.
He drafted everywhere anyway. So I guess not a big surprise, but the fact that, you know, he came up when he did and just rolled. Christopher Sanchez is somebody that, at least beat out his projections quite a bit. I know there's plenty of people who are big fans. He's a top 100 pick in the drafts, but he, like Logan Webb, got you much more than their top 100 pick, especially in strikeouts and the ratios. So nice little call out there. So when you are trying to tap in, you try to figure out what your draft strategy is revolving around pitchers. At least there's two examples of like 90 to 100 ADP range where if you want to double tap, maybe there's a good chance that you can, you know, get an ace in the mix, instead of
Drake going Baldwin with was a good catcher, wild card, 19 home runs, 80 RBI, in a little over 400 plate appearances with a nice 274 batting average. That's really nice for a catcher, getting that 274 batting average with the 80 RBI.
All right. I think we've waxed poetic enough about all the pleasant surprises. So let's get ready to talk in the complete opposite direction next week, as we go into some negative surprises, or disappointments, I guess is the better way of putting it. But with all that, Kevin, enjoy some playoff baseball. You got anything else you want to add to close us out?
I don't think so. I think I began the show with it when I talked about the Tanner Bell and the question, you know, why did teams that performed well roster the players they did, and where were they right, and where could they have done better? Including my own teams, right? I'm not just studying everybody else, but, you know, but it actually goes more back the other way. Not just what do I think I did right and what could I have done better, but based on what did other people do? Why did they do it that way? And why was that a good or a bad thing? That's what fascinates me this time of year, and I think can really help us going into next season.
Nice. All right, guys. Well, we have a long way to go until this next season starts. So let's just sit back and relax and enjoy what we have in front of us. And that is going to be some amazing playoff baseball. We've got
possibly extra innings.
I was going to say, we have almost all of our game ones in the books by the time we're done recording this, but man, always good to have the games all kind of spread out throughout the course of the day. Even if it kind of puts a damper on some of those low, I still feel bad for Cleveland for having all those day games during the first round. But with all that, that's going to do it for episode 233 of On the Wire. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.